threatening us now, but they'll also help us with species that are a problem in the future. This is really important to our forests, to our ecosystems, and to our native wildlife. So please act on it. And the Conservation District will be your partner in this. We work one-on-one with lots of landowners. We do lots of educational programs. We have workshops. We'll be right there with you to make sure that we actually work on this.
Thank you. Thanks for your work on this. Sir.
Mayor Adams, council members, my name is Ryan Hoof with the State Department of Environmental Quality. Today I am here on behalf of the Oregon Invasive Species Council, a consortium of federal, state, local, and tribal governments, nonprofit organizations, academic institutions, and industry representatives. And I am here today to support the City of Portland's invasive plant policy and regulatory improvement project. The mission of our council is to keep invasive species out of Oregon, to inform the public, and to control or eradicate invasive species that attempt to become established in our state. As you know, our council has been supportive of the City of Portland's efforts during the past several years to address the threat of invasive species and what they pose to Oregon's economy, to our environment, and to our quality of life. Because of the magnitude of this threat and the need to maintain and restore healthy ecosystems, the Oregon Invasive Species Council supported the implementation of your invasive plant management strategy last year. The strategy will ultimately reduce invasive plants on almost half of the public lands within the city. In addition, the strategy effectively articulates a number of critical elements, including code and policy changes, outreach and education efforts, stakeholder coordination, control and restoration priorities, wildfire risk reduction, the protection of the best parks habitat, early detection and rapid response, and working with landowners. The regulatory improvement program that you're considering today is a key step in successfully implementing the invasive plant management strategy because it updates the Portland plant list and improves invasive plant control in development and non-development situations by updating the zoning code and property maintenance regulations. Both of these activities serve to provide additional guidance on invasive species, to create one priority nuisance plants list by consolidating several lists, to clarify existing zoning regulations, to add an important standard that requires removal of nuisance plants, and to establish rules requiring priority species on the nuisance plants list to be eradicated from property. This combination of education and outreach with regulatory mechanisms is both creative and proactive, and once again will serve as a model for municipalities across the country. While I'm here today, I would also like to take the opportunity to commend you on the work that you are doing to consider adoption of an invasive animal strategy for the city. The recent completion of an assessment of terrestrial and aquatic invasive species within the city will lay the groundwork for further development of a draft policy with stakeholders. Both the invasive plant management strategy and potential invasive animal strategy will help to ensure full implementation of the Portland Watershed Management Plan. The Invasive Species Council fully supports the policy review and regulatory improvement project and is pleased to be a partner in this larger coordinated effort. Our council is available at any time to assist you in furthering what we consider to be a very high priority program for the city. Thank you for your contribution to Oregon's invasive species prevention efforts.
Thanks for being such a great partner in your statewide scope. Hi.
Hi, Mayor Adams and commissioners. My name is Kathleen Murren. I'm the City Nature East Zone Manager for Portland Parks and Recreation, and with that work, I manage the natural areas and trails on the east side of the river for Portland Parks. In 2000, Portland Parks and Recreation spearheaded an effort to focus on invasive weeds in our area and their control. Portland Parks and Recreation worked with other bureaus, including Bureau of Environmental Services and the Water Bureau, to make progress on this important topic. One of the outcomes of that effort was a forum on the topic, which was attended by many regional partners. And from that forum, the four-county cooperative weed management area group was formed. That group continues now and was one of the participants in this newest review. The work done this past year builds on that foundation and takes the work further. It targets prevention and early control strategies. This new review and proposal done by Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and funded by Bureau of Environmental Services was a cooperative effort, and it involved many of the bureaus. It was a thoughtful approach, and we in Portland Parks and Recreation were involved, adding our technical advice and to the effort. And as a result, we believe that a sturdy and balanced approach has been developed, and which moves us along in our ability to protect and manage our regional natural areas. Portland Parks and Recreation is in full support of this proposal.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all. Anyone else?
That's all who signed up.
All right. Unless there's anyone else to testify, council discussion. This is a non-emergency.
I'd just like to make a few comments.
Sure.
First, to thank you, Mayor Adams, for prioritizing this and for continuing to support it. I think there might have been some who had said in this economic crisis we should just scrap this project and come back to it later, but you persevered, and here we are. And so thank you. It's long overdue. As Greg Shifty said, 1975 is a long time to recognize a problem and then have an effective strategy for addressing it. I appreciate the staff's work, and particularly your attention to the fiscal impacts and how we're going to actually implement it, giving us that information. I appreciate the Bureau of Environmental Services dedicating staff and funding and support, both technical and in inspections. And all of the citizens who participate not only in pulling ivy but in giving policy recommendations. Commissioner Fish mentioned the 108 citizen support groups in parks, and we appreciate myself as a former ivy puller, I don't get to do it very much anymore, but I had the privilege of pulling ivy in over 20 of Portland's neighborhoods. And I think one thing that's not necessarily recognized is how enjoyable pulling ivy is. You get filthy, it's great exercise, it's out in the fresh air, it's usually out in the rain because we can only do it in the wintertime. And it's fantastic exercise and a lot of fun. So I would encourage everyone to do it. And even though we recognize that we have a major problem with English ivy, on your own property or in a particular area, you can eradicate it and you can keep it gone. So various friends groups, the Tran Creek Watershed Council, took ownership of a 2-acre plot in Tran Creek State Natural Area, which we worked on every month and made sure that that 2 acres was free of ivy. So pick a small plot and have at it and take pride in that. And I can't let this occasion go by without mentioning Sandra Diedrich, who with Portland Parks and Recreation has really was one of the great founders of this project, and not only inspirational to youth leaders and to people like me who went to pull ivy in Forest Park, but looked at the science of how best to eradicate ivy and what can you do to be a tree saver and how the impacts of volunteers pulling ivy truly does make a difference. And so I remember Sandy very, very fondly, and I hope that as we're all pulling ivy, we each pull one for her.
Hear, hear. This, unless there's objection, thank you again for all your work, and it moves to a second reading and vote next week. Thank you. Carla, I think that gets us to time certain, 10:15. We're running a little late. It is a non-emergency ordinance. Can you please read the title for 156?
Approve agreement to initiate process for a land exchange with the Mount Hood National Forest to exchange selected lands within the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit.
Can we read 157 at the same time?
Without objection. 157, establish watershed protection policies for city-owned lands in the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. President Fish, I'm going to turn this over to our guests who are going to talk about the history and development of these two ordinances. Eddie?
Good morning, Commissioner Fish and Council. It's my pleasure today to present two items to you that are related to the long-term protection of the Bull Run watershed. The first is an agreement to explore a proposal for Portland and the U.S. Forest Service to exchange roughly equal amounts of land with each other within the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit. And the second item is an amendment to Portland City Code that would establish significant new security, land use, and environmental protections for city-owned lands within the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit. We're fortunate today to have Gary Larson, the Mount Hood National Forest Supervisor, with us for this discussion on the land exchange. We are always glad to have Gary's thoughtful and articulate contributions to our council presentation, so thank you, Gary, for your attendance. The process here is I'm going to provide some background on both the items first. I'll turn it over to Gary, and then we'll both be available for questions. So, thank you, Carla. So as the council is well aware, the Bull Run Watershed serves as an exceptional primary drinking water source for over 850,000 Oregonians. For the city and our federal management partner, the Mount Hood National Forest, the watershed is also a significant ecological reserve with over 100 square miles of forested habitat that is closed to public access and exposed to minimal human activities. Our efforts today are designed to enhance both of these aspects of the watershed. In 2007, the City Council approved an updated stewardship agreement between the Mount Hood National Forest and the city, known as the Bull Run Agreement. The purpose of this document was to refine the roles and responsibilities of the city and the Forest Service in protecting and managing the Bull Run. The agreement established that the city is the primary steward and responsible party for drinking water system and aquatic resources within the unit. It also assigned the Forest Service as the primary steward and responsible party for the upland terrestrial resources within the unit. To help accomplish the realization of these roles, a key recommendation from that agreement was a proposed land exchange that would allow the city to acquire ownership of the lands encompassing its first drinking water reservoir and its associated infrastructure. So the current land ownership in the unit looks something like this. The city owns roughly 4% of the lands within the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit, which are indicated on the map in blue. About half of the city's land holdings are closely collected around Reservoir 2, Dam 2, and the Headworks facility on the left-hand side of this map. The rest of the city's land holdings are located in uplands further away from the reservoirs and our drinking water infrastructure. The existing land ownership pattern results from the city's acquisition of private land holdings and associated water rights in the 1890s before the city actually began using the Bull Run River as a drinking water source. The Forest Service owns virtually all of the remaining lands within the unit indicated on this map here in green. So if we go forward with the proposed land exchange, the resulting land ownership pattern in the Bull Run would look like this. The city would provide roughly 2,500 acres of land to the Forest Service in upland areas while obtaining roughly 2,800 acres in land from the Forest Service in the area surrounding Reservoir 1. This would put the city's Dam 1, its Bear Creek Houses, and Hydroelectric Project 1 on city-owned land and create a contiguous land ownership pattern for the city encompassing nearly all of the major water system facilities within the Bull Run. We believe there are significant benefits of this proposal. The Water Bureau believes that completing the land exchange would provide the principal benefit to the city of reducing the number of federal permits required to operate and maintain the water system. I don't think it will offend our federal partners here in the room to point out that federal permitting processes are both very time-consuming and expensive, typically running into the tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars and taking several months to complete. While the land exchange wouldn't eliminate federal oversight of the city lands that it would receive, it would greatly simplify the planning and budgeting process for routine maintenance activities and save the city significant staff time and money. It's important to note that the savings would benefit not only water ratepayers, but also the general fund as well. The hydroelectric projects in the Bull Run were paid for with general obligation bonds, and the funding generated by the current power sales agreement for these facilities goes to the city's general fund. The current license requires payment by the city to operate on federal land. The Water Bureau's hydroelectric project manager estimates that if the land under Hydro Project 1 was transferred to city ownership by fiscal year 2013-14, the cumulative benefit to the general fund would be over $850,000 in 2017 when the current power sales agreement expires. He further estimates the annual net savings to the general fund would be approximately $500,000 a year thereafter. The Forest Service would also see significant benefits from the exchange, including reduced costs and staff time associated with permitting activities, and a net increase in the amount of lands that it holds with critical habitat supporting federally listed species. So in terms of next steps for the land exchange, it's important to emphasize that the agreement to initiate is just the beginning of a formal federal process that is anticipated to take at least 2 years to conduct. This is not the proposed land exchange itself that's before you today. The federal land exchange process will include a federal National Environmental Policy Act review, or NEPA, which includes environmental analysis, cultural and historic resource analysis, formal public review and comment, and the opportunity at the conclusion of the process for administrative appeals. The process is anticipated to cost between $290,000 and $490,000 to pay for the Forest Service staff time and the required technical analyses that are required for the process. If the agreement to initiate is approved, we would anticipate the collection agreement between the Forest Service and the city coming back to the council for approval within 4 to 6 weeks. Following this process, we would expect a final exchange agreement between the city and the Forest Service, if such agreement still makes sense to both parties, to come back to City Council in either 2012 or 2013 for consideration. So now we'll talk a little bit about the code provisions, the code amendments. In 2007, during the outreach and public involvement process for the Bull Run Agreement, citizen stakeholders indicated their concern that the land exchange would transfer ownership of federal lands to the Bull Run in the Bull Run that are currently protected by special legislation to the city, where such protections are not currently formalized. Although the Water Bureau has managed its lands within the Bull Run watershed, honoring the same timber cutting restrictions that exist on federal lands, the city has never formally adopted these protections in city code. So in early 2008, following the adoption of the Bull Run Agreement, Water Bureau staff, including myself, in the city attorney's office, sat down and worked with stakeholders from the Friends of the Reservoirs, the Portland Utility Review Board, citizens interested in Bull Run issues in Oregon Wild, to develop city code language that would ensure that city-owned lands within the Bull Run, both those that would be transferred and those that are currently held, would have the same formal protections or would have formal protections consistent with the surrounding federal lands. As a result of these discussions, the city attorney has drafted city code amendments that would do the following. First, they will formally close city-owned lands both within and adjacent to the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit to public entry and establish trespass penalties to assist in enforcement of the closure. The adoption of this code will add 835 acres of land to the inventory that is formally closed to protect the city's water supply. Second, the amendments will prohibit tree cutting on city lands within the Bull Run in the same manner established by Congress for federal lands in the Oregon Resource Conservation and Little Sandy Acts. These pieces of legislation establish tree cutting protections on federal lands within the Bull Run, with the exceptions of when it is necessary to support the drinking water quality, drinking water supply, or the hydroelectric system. Third, these amendments establish land use restrictions that prohibit residential, commercial, or industrial development on city-owned lands within or adjacent to the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit. Fourth, they establish a requirement for the Water Bureau to report on a quarterly basis what capital projects and regular maintenance activities it is in the process of both planning for and implementing in the unit. And then finally, based on input from Commissioner Fritz in our briefings, we amended the draft code last week to incorporate the prohibition on the transfer of critical Bull Run water system assets to any private or public entity that was created when the council made its LT2 treatment decision last summer. So I want to conclude my part of the presentation just by saying that the Water Bureau is quite pleased to bring these important and potentially historic items forward for your consideration. If passed by the council, these items will enhance our working relationship with our federal Forest Service partners, formally establish significant protection measures for the city's Bull Run lands, and provide substantial long-term savings to both city ratepayers and taxpayers. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Gary, and we'll both be available for your questions.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable President Fish, Commissioner Fritz, and Honorable Commissioner Leonard, you two. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you about this morning. This is an important milestone in, I guess I'd have to say, a process that started probably 8 years ago or 9 years ago. First, a little context. We own, as you're aware of, 96% of the watershed, you all about 4%. You manage the utility, the Bull Run utility, water utility under permit from us. You probably don't know, I don't even think we've talked about this, Commissioner Leonard, that our agency, the Forest Service, has policy direction to collect a fee from you all for all of the water that's produced in the watershed. And myself, like most other line managers in a similar situation, have found a way to finesse that. We do not collect that fee, gratefully, on all fronts.
Thank you.
You're welcome. One would think. I'm working my 13th year.
Don't make
him
prove his point.
The agreement to initiate this land exchange, which is before you today, has its genesis in a memorandum of understanding that was signed between the city and the Mount Hood National Forest. And in that agreement, we did a variety of things. I'm going to take just a moment to share with you, because this land exchange is only one portion. We created a common operations model for our own respective administration and management activities that take place in the watershed. And we spent a long time carefully articulating differentiated roles and responsibilities in a variety of areas, including our planning and decision-making, security and access management, emergency planning and response, the transportation system. We made significant decisions about the transportation system, recognizing that we don't need about half of it. And by the way, I'm happy to report that we either have already decommissioned or are in the process of decommissioning all of the roads in the Bull Run watershed that were our responsibility to decommission. Very proud of that. We talked about roles and responsibilities with respect to fire suppression, water, natural resources, and conservation education, one of my favorites. And then the last thing that we contemplated is this particular land exchange. So this MOU is an expression of how we work together. And it honors the fact that we've been legislatively connected at the hip for over a century. It happened since the establishment of the Oregon National Forest in 1905. And from that point forward, we've been connected together at the hip. One of the problems with joint federal and local government collaboration is that neither your laws, authorities, regulations, or policies go away, nor do mine. And as a consequence, sometimes we find ourselves in difficult circumstances. And so I'm speaking to you this morning in support of the land exchange, and I want to talk both about the costs and the benefits. One of the benefits is that it avoids costly administrative procedures when there's an overlap of authorities. And my favorite, the poster child for that, is an example of something called the Larson Intertie. It's no relationship to me, spelled differently. It's named for the Larson Ranch, which is near there, near the watershed. If you're not familiar, it's basically a very large water valve that's underground. And I don't know what the structure cost to build. It was a fair amount of money. But between us, between the Water Bureau and the Forest Service, we spent over $500,000 real dollars that it could have been spent on something else on the administrative processes associated with it. And the crux of it was that it was a permitted activity that was taking place on Forest Service-owned land, so we had to do NEPA and we had to do consultation with the regulatory agencies. And the interesting thing about Endangered Species Act responsibilities is that you all operate under one provision of the Act. We operate under another provision of the Act. And so you ended up paying for duplicate coverage. Not only did the city redeem its responsibilities under the Endangered Species Act, I redeemed my responsibilities under the Endangered Species Act. By the time the smoke cleared, over $500,000 real dollars were spent. From my standpoint, that money made not one marginal difference on the project and how it was implemented, how it was designed, or how it was executed. It made no net difference. Had the land exchange happened before that, there would have been no federal nexus in the decision making, and we wouldn't have been involved. That $500,000 would not have been spent. So pure dollars and cents is one reason. Another important reason is it benefits us. It lets us better integrate our land management because it lets us focus on what we do best, which is being stewards of the Bull Run's remarkable ecosystem. It benefits the city because it lets you focus on what you do best, which is run one of the best water utilities in the country. We gain, the Forest Service, the American public gains additional spotted owl habitat. There is no net loss of wetlands or floodplains with the exchange, and the Water Bureau gains control of the footprint on which its physical infrastructure is erected. Overall, it reduces administrative costs and lets us focus on exclusively on our particular responsibilities under the Endangered Species Act and the best spotted owl habitat on the forests in the Bull Run, and lets you all focus on your job of being a water utility. So I am in support of starting the land exchange process. Unfortunately, we're not very good partners when it comes to land exchanges. It's by law, regulation, and policy, it's an arduous process. There are 65 steps in all. This step that you're contemplating, the agreement to initiate, is merely step 12. The NEPA, which is further on down the line, is only step number 29, and there are remaining a total of 65 steps. We'll run the process. We'll run it with great diligence and with all of the efficiency we can muster, but because it does talk about the topic of exchanging lands, the federal process has a great number of checks and balances built in and a great amount of due process. So in closing, this land exchange that we're initiating the beginning of it, not making decisions about whether or not the exchange actually happens, is merely one of the agreements we made under the Memorandum of Understanding. And this exchange is a real, tangible, important legacy that we can leave for those that follow us who are responsible for the administration of the watershed. It'll provide better and more efficient service to Water Bureau's customers. It'll provide benefits, including environmental services, to the residents of Portland and to the citizens of the United States, and it'll help us each better redeem the responsibilities for which the National Forest was created and the Water Bureau was created. So I thank you and would be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Larson and Mr. Campbell. Commissioner Leonard, would you like to take testimony first or have a council discussion?
Anyway.
I have questions. Pardon
me?
I have questions.
You want testimony first, Amanda?
No. I actually want to ask Mr. Campbell some questions. Okay. Because then I think that will inform the testimony, perhaps. So my question, and thank you for your good work on this, and in concept, I support this process. I'm, as usual, concerned about the details. Can you tell me what kind of environmental management plan would apply to if once these properties around the lakes are all city-owned?
I'm not.
So do we have a management plan for our properties on the Bull Run? And if the Water Bureau was proposing to do some development around the lake, what kind of process would that have to go to if it were city property?
Currently, on city-owned lands within the Bull Run, we are required to follow the land use policies of the county that those facilities or that land would be in. If we pass the code provisions here, we would create an additional set of prohibitions on the types of developments that we could actually even entertain. So currently, for instance, we could basically, we're only constrained by the land use regulations of Clackamas County for the lands that we currently hold within the Bull Run. So going forward, we think passing the code amendments will help us establish sort of the parameters for what's possible within the unit on city-owned lands.
So that's of concern to me because this is probably our most precious environmental resource. If it were in the city, it would have an environmental protection zone and a setback and various requirements for how development could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, so that we would be relying on the Clackamas County Code for that?
That's not accurate. Item 157, the next, I had them read two items. We're discussing both. So the second item is what Eddie just referred to, adopts a set of environmental standards that is new.
But it doesn't say how you process development applications adjacent to the lakes. It talks about not cutting trees.
He just answered that we are subject to Clackamas County's.
So that's the answer. So I'll look into that for next week as to what those are. And so will the intergovernment agreements be used so that there's understanding about the U.S. Forest Service management of the surrounding lands and that it won't degrade the city-owned properties now that we don't have the properties that are further out into the watershed, into the habitat areas?
Gary may help me on this, but the lands that the city transfers to federal ownership will, I think, automatically have the same restrictions on them that are currently in place for federal lands within the unit. I don't even think there's anything that the federal government needs to do because I think the designation was originally set on lands within the management unit. And so all of these lands are within the management unit. So any city-owned lands that move to federal ownership will immediately take on the same federal protections as their neighboring parcels.
So the Forest Service boundary includes the privately owned lands that you all own, and our legislation, almost all of it is tied to the Watershed Management Unit, so it's federal lands within the Watershed Management Unit. In point of fact, our planning direction is to manage it, the entire ecosystem, for its old growth attributes, and as I mentioned, it's some of the finest old growth ecosystem habitat we have in our forest.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
And if I could, just to go back to your previous question, one of the things to understand about the future sort of oversight on city activities within the areas close to the reservoirs is that much of the facilities that the Water Bureau has and where it would do work are covered under Federal Environmental Regulatory Commission as part of our FERC project areas. So we have the two dams and most of the facilities, including our headworks and the Bull Run or the Bear Creek facilities, that are all included in those FERC footprints. And so FERC provides additional oversight into how projects are conducted and typically also involves a NEPA process for things that we would propose to do for part of the water system. So I just want to make sure that's clear. As I was mentioning in my remarks, exchanging the land doesn't eliminate federal oversight of the city in these areas. It simply removes one particular layer that we're currently working with the Forest Service.
Thank you.
Okay, Carla, do we have people who signed up to testify?
Well, yes. First, thank Gary for anybody else. Thank you again for your great partnership with us. There can't be a better example in the U.S. of the federal government partnering with the local government than what you've set with the Mount Hood National Forest and the Portland Water Bureau. Ongoing appreciation of your excellent efforts. Thank you, Gary, very much.
So if you gentlemen would stick around in case questions come up that we need to call you back for. Thank you very much. Carla, do we have people who signed up?
We have two people. Please come on up, John Wish and Regna Merritt.
And this is for both 156 and 157?
I have one sign-up sheet, yes.
Yeah, so people can speak to either or both. Welcome to City Council. If you could just give us your first name, excuse me, your full name, and each of you will have 3 minutes.
My name's John Wish, and thank you, Councilman, for allowing me to speak. Some 12 or 15 years ago, my friend Joe Miller asked me more than once, what was I doing to preserve the Bull Run? And every time I would see him, he would say, what are you doing to preserve the Bull Run? He would ask this of virtually anyone and everyone he talked to. I got involved. I support the land exchange process and the accompanying revisions to city code. I support them because, one, these proposed changes are consonant with the 2007 Bull Run Watershed Management Unit Agreement. Two, the land exchange makes it clear that the Water Bureau will have responsibility for the land adjacent to Bull Run Water. Three, the land exchange makes it easier for both the Water Bureau and the Forest Service to be good stewards for all the land owned by each within the management unit. Four, the city code changes provide almost all the needed regulations ensuring good stewardship of the land. I do have a concern, one concern, with the proposed section 213650E, the last section. I recommend that section E be amended to allow for more transparent, timelier, and less costly administrative processes. It seems to me the city could use the Bureau's website to track activities online in real time rather than a compiled quarterly report. In conclusion, I support the process and most all the city code changes. Perhaps even my departed friend Joe Miller could have accepted this proposal. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Regna Merritt. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Wild and Oregon Wild Conservation Leaders Fund. Mayor and Commissioners, I thank you very much for this opportunity to speak. As you know, Oregon Wild has worked for decades to protect the drinking water and forests of the Bull Run. And in recent years, the City and the Water Bureau have played a key role in protecting the Bull Run. I thank Commissioner Leonard and the Water Bureau for inviting Oregon Wild to participate in a stakeholders group that worked on the draft's code amendments to protect the city-owned lands within the Bull Run. While we made important progress there and do appreciate the modifications made to address our concerns, we believe that the current document does not go far enough to protect citizen rights in the Bull Run in the future. This City Council and the Water Bureau have a culture of wanting to protect the Bull Run, but we can't assume that every future water manager and council member will be on the same page. So it's our job to make sure that the ordinance is right and tight and that it will stand the test of time. We need to have a city protection code, but we must do better than the one that you have before you today, particularly where a land exchange is involved. This proposal includes quarterly notification, as John referenced, of activities and planned activities in the Bull Run, which means that some controversial activities could be well into the planning stages or perhaps even completed by the time the citizens are notified. Additionally, just in the last few days, as people are learning about the proposed ordinance, they've expressed other concerns about lack of public process, things that we could do better and include in the proposed ordinance. And just in the last 24 hours, I've heard many fine recommendations, including, number one, that a public hearing be required if trees other than hazard trees are going to be cut. I think that's extraordinarily reasonable given that with the proposed land exchange, we'd be losing the protections of the National Environmental Policy Act, which mandates potential environmental impacts of proposed federal actions be analyzed and disclosed. It seems like the city could have a hearing to do the same. Number two, I've heard that a recommendation that an independent citizen panel be established to review requests for non-routine entry permits. I think this should be explored. And number three, that there should be a strong affirmative statement within the ordinance that trees in the uncut forest provide the best drinking water. This makes sense to me as well. I think these are legitimate requests and should be considered by the Water Bureau and the council. Be happy to help on that. After considering the new information, I think the ordinance should not be approved in its current form, and that the agreement to initiate the land exchange should not move forward until and unless improvements are made in the proposed city code. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Anyone else signed up to testify?
That was all who signed up.
Council discussion.
I just want to clarify something with Commissioner Leonard. 156 would authorize the Water Bureau to initiate the process, and that I think from the presentation we had will take some time before it's finalized. What is the linkage between initiating that process and the adoption in 157 of these new policies, and how do they fit together?
It is to assure those that have concerns that albeit I don't think it, as a practical matter, any Portland City Council would ever politically take the position that cutting trees or doing anything that the current federal prohibitions regulate, any city council would do. And it probably doesn't need to be in writing, but this does codify those restrictions in that it reflects exactly what the federal regulations currently are on those areas that we would receive, so that we would have the same restrictions as currently exist on city-owned land to address those concerns.
And just so I'm clear on this, agreement to initiate the process puts us down on the road to getting an agreement, but that will not be consummated for some time. These guidelines would be anticipatory?
Well, they would not only be anticipatory, they would apply to the current city-owned lands that currently don't have those same restrictions on them as the federal regulations do. So they would not only be in anticipation of a future agreement, they would actually apply to existing city-owned lands.
My final question is, with respect to the comments from Oregon Wild, are there any, in your judgment, amendments or tweaks that you would want us to consider or hear from staff on before we have the final vote on that?
I would not. And I mean, one of the underlying issues, for an example, I mean, I've been working on this for quite some time, so I'm familiar with what some of the concerns are, even if they weren't clearly articulated here. For an example, having tours in the watershed has been a concern, that we have regular tours. It's actually what I think a strategy that creates for future generations activist environmental Portlanders who hopefully as school children tour the watershed, understand the significance of it, understand the importance of it, and in the future are educated enough because of our outreach efforts to not allow any logging, not allow the kinds of activities that we all agree are not appropriate there. So we do have an aggressive program, public outreach, to get people into the watershed to see it so they understand visually what it is that we have as an asset, so that no future generation of Portlanders would ever be lulled into thinking it was okay to log.
Because we're not going to vote on this today, it's going to a second reading. What I would simply ask Commissioner Leonard is on the comments that were presented through the citizen testimony, if David could just follow up with us with any comments between now and then that the Water Bureau has to address those, and I would appreciate that.
And I'd like some more information on how future developments in the city, the proposed city owned areas, would be processed. If in the future a council wanted to build a lodge at the Bull Run for school kids to stay there overnight, what would be the process by which that would be assessed? If it was going to happen within the city of Portland, like in Mount Tabor Park, then we would have a land use review and citizens would have the right of appeal. How would they know and what would be the process? Where currently that kind of construction might go through the NEPA process, and I was actually very interested in the example that Mr. Campbell gave us as far as the shelter that was constructed for children in the watershed, you know, so that they don't get wet while they're standing hearing about it. But that went through a process to make sure that it was not going to damage the resources. What would be the process in the future? And then I do want some more information both about the Clackamas County regulations that would apply and about whether we have an environmental management plan that would also apply.
What we will do is get you the Clackamas County regulations because that is the process, and they're subject to the land use laws of the state of Oregon. Anything that we do in the watershed that's on city-owned property within Clackamas County, we have to get a permit and go through a process and are subjected to the same kinds of processes that anybody in the city of Portland must go through, including appeals and other kinds of issues. For instance, we've done some renovation work at Dodge Park that's all been subject to permitting, zoning requirements, land use requirements of Clackamas County, including appeals processes.
Are there environmental protection and conservation zones in Clackamas County?
Oh, yeah.
Are they? So is this land all protection zone, or what is the zoning for it?
I'm not familiar, pardon me, I'm not familiar with the specific land use designation of all the lands that are potentially to come into ownership of the city. One thing I want to point out is it's not just Clackamas County, it's also Multnomah County. In fact, I think most of the lands that would come into ownership of the city that are currently in federal ownership are in Multnomah County. So we'll need to get both of those counties' information. I don't know to what degree you want to address any of this now, but
no, that's fine. Okay. You can get to, and just one further question for clarity. If we have to provide an ultraviolet treatment plant because of the federal rules, would that be built in this area?
We're analyzing that now. That's part of this process since the council made the decision that it did, and I've got the engineers working on that as we speak. We've made no final decision.
I know.
But it's possible that it could be in this area, or?
Well, it would be on city-owned land. It would have to be somewhere along the conduits, obviously, because the water that would be treated would be water coming through the conduits to the city. We have
So it could be outside of the management area. No?
The area that's being considered for the ultraviolet treatment plant is adjacent to our Headworks facility, and that's already within city-owned land inside of the management unit.
Okay. Thank you.
By the way, Eddie, thanks for an outstanding PowerPoint. I think I'm going to have both of my bureaus consult with you.
All right, unless there's additional council discussion, this moves to a second reading. I believe that gets us to a series of second readings. Carla, can you please read the titles for 174, which is a second reading, 175, which is a resolution, and 178. Is 178 considered a second reading, or is it...
I believe we have taken testimony
on
this on the 6th of January.
So it's a second reading?
It has had a reading of its first title.
Okay. All right.
Ben, are you okay with that? On 178.
We lose Nick. We'll vote on them individually.
At 178 is the PGE Park zoning code one. Andrew, considering it a second reading, we've taken testimony on January 6th.
So the item was read and testimony was considered on January 6th?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then this would be a second reading.
Okay. Can you please read each title?
Yes. 174, approve agreements between the City and Peregrine Sports LLC for the renovation and operation of PGE Park for use by Major League Soccer. 175, authorize Chief Administrative Officer or designee to execute a revocable permit of entry to allow Peregrine Sports LLC access to PGE Park to construct the foundation system for the Major League Soccer improvements. and 178 amend the zoning code to allow a limited amount of office use at PGE Park.
All right, would you please call the vote on 174?
Fritz?
Well, I start by acknowledging the good work that our negotiating team, led by Ken Rust, has done in negotiating the best possible deal for our city under the circumstances. And I also recognize Tim Crail and Tom Bizzo and my staff who have done outstanding work and analysis looking into this many twists and turns of this saga. Many of the concerns that I raised over the past year have been addressed by the terms that are included in the agreement. I appreciate the personal guarantee that Merritt and Henry Paulson have made to cover any shortfall for the first 7 years, and to ensure that once started, the project will be seen through to completion. I like the stipulation similar to the one negotiated with the Trailblazers, requiring the team to stay in Portland or pay as if they were. And I appreciate that our financial experts have been able to reconfigure the debt structure in a way that reduces the total debt payment substantially. By using a line item of credit and delaying the issuance of bonds until construction is completed, I am told that the city will not likely need to issue zero coupon bonds. The result is that instead of paying off the bonds in 2034 at a total cost of $44.5 million, the bonds will be paid off in 2028 for a total cost of $24 million. If taxpayers have to pay for something that does not provide family wage jobs after the construction phase, it is better that they will be paying $24 million instead of $44.5 million. Still, I do have concerns about the cost, the source of the funds, and the alternate uses for those funds, the labor agreements, both in the limited opportunity for organizing and in city payment for top-up wages for the duration of the contract, and the question of which sports fans win and which sports fans lose. $24 million could be used for other purposes. Add to that the $4.7 million over the course of the contract for the taxpayers to subsidize top-up wages for stadium event staff, which the city will continue to pay even if workers are successful in their one shot at an organizing meeting to form a union, and then $600,000 to $800,000 every 8 years to replace the turf. The projected ticket taxes of $5 million paid by Timber fans don't begin to cover the costs. What else could we do with over $29 million? Today, PGE Park is a multiple-use stadium that serves soccer, baseball, football, and other sporting events. In 2001, the city decided to redevelop PGE Park into a better baseball facility, spending $38.5 million of taxpayers' money to redevelop the park and an additional $33 million in debt service to cover those bonds. Currently, we are scheduled to pay those bonds until 2022, 12 years after eliminating the ability to use the facility for baseball. For over 100 years, Portland has had a sports facility that was capable of hosting professional baseball. At the end of the Beavers' 2010 season, that will change, and that is sad. I could have supported a solution that would have allowed both sports to coexist at PGE Park through use of movable stands. The inflexibility of Major League Soccer and the decisions of my colleagues will likely cause us to lose baseball in Portland. I love the game of soccer, and I appreciate that Timber fans are happy to be getting an MLS franchise. Soccer fans must recognize that their joy comes at the significant costs to baseball, basketball, and hockey fans. The Beaver fans will likely lose their team, and the Winterhawk and Blazer fans will be subsidizing soccer for many years. It has been said that this deal protects the taxpayers and that no citywide tax dollars or general funds will be used for this project. That is true at this time, but it is hard to imagine how it can remain so. The projects will be tying up the bulk of the spectator fund until 2028. The first 6 years are particularly precarious, with annual shortfalls ranging from $250,000 to $720,000. No contributions will be made to capital reserves during those years. In fact, it will be necessary to draw down the spectator fund balance significantly to cover that shortfall. It is the lost opportunity for other users of those funds which is the real cost to the taxpayers. We are currently in the process of a Coliseum repurposing project. The Coliseum needs to be rehabilitated, which will take significant resources. By going forward with the soccer redevelopment, spectator funds will not be available for the Coliseum. Council created the spectator fund and directs what those funds could be used for. Council maintains the ability to redefine allowed uses of the spectator fund and which revenue streams go into it. It is not like water or BS rates, which are restricted by state law and city charter. Of course, we must pay off the bonds that are backed by the state spectator funds, But what then? Then the council could choose to spend taxes in any way. How will we pay for the Coliseum improvements with no spectator funds available? The only realistic answer is to use urban renewal dollars. And now we are talking about impacts to Portland and Multnomah County taxpayers. The Oregon Convention Center is an option 3 urban renewal area that depends on citywide taxes. So while it's true that there are no direct impacts on citywide taxpayers in redeveloping PGE Park, the indirect cost to taxpayers is substantial. The spectator fund would be in better shape if PGE Park sat empty for the next 25 years than if we go forward with incurring additional debt on a project that can never pay for itself. Any use of PGE Park that does not involve additional debt would leave the spectator fund in better shape than moving forward with this project. I honestly hope that MLS soccer succeeds in Portland. I hope the day arrives that the revenues generated from PGE Park will pay for the cost of operations and debt service. In the meantime, I hope every Timbers fan will hug a Blazer fan, because those are the sports patrons who are really paying for this venue. No.
So Commissioner Saltzman has called in to vote. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I have to ask if there are any objections. Is that correct under our electronic voting policy?
As the presiding officer, you have the ability to make the determination and then ask if there's objections to proceeding.
So I make the determination that electronic voting is allowable on these matters. Is there any objection?
Preserving my objection. No, just kidding. I just.
Nervous laughter.
Let Commissioner Saltzman know that Commissioner Fish nearly objected but restrained himself. Skip, can you come up here? Commissioner Saltzman?
Yes.
Hi, welcome.
Hi.
Are you on a sunny beach somewhere?
No. Okay. Far from it.
Who's next on? No, you come up here. Who's next on the?
Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I made my statement last week to explain my vote, so I'll be very brief today. Subsequent to my statement, Ken Rust, our chief financial officer, scheduled some time with me and clarified an important issue to me concerning the what I framed as the opportunity costs of the existing revenue streams under the Spectator Facility Fund. And I appreciate Ken for taking that time. The colloquy that's on the record from the last meeting, I think, is slightly incomplete to the extent that there's more flexibility currently for what we can do with the existing revenue stream that isn't pledged to other bonds. But under the proposed agreement, we would be pledging that revenue stream in order to give us a better credit rating and reduce our borrowing costs. So, with that clarification, I think I have a better understanding of the impact on the Spectator Facility Fund. And I will say that following my conversation with Ken, who is someone I hold in the highest regard, I have even more confidence in his judgment in this regard. So I appreciate the time you spent walking through that. With that issue resolved, the remaining issue for me was risk to the taxpayers. What is Commissioner Saltzman doing? Stop playing with those marbles.
Commissioner Saltzman, can you mute until it's your turn to talk?
Sounds like you're cracking your knuckles or something.
Okay, sorry about that. Can I just vote?
I'd be happy to.
You don't want to hang on for another hour, Dan, and listen to Nick talk?
He's
going to be brief. It'll be no more than an hour.
I will conclude.
Is your cell phone battery going to die on you before it gets done?
I thought it was important to put on the record the clarification concerning Spectator Facility Fund. The issues about risk to the taxpayer have been addressed to my satisfaction, and the fact that there is no general fund exposure nor contribution from an urban renewal district in this deal, current or contemplated, gives me further confidence. And so for all the reasons that I articulated when we last met, I vote aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard?
Well, this has been a
and he hangs up. So,
this has been a very interesting and unique experience in my public life, including being hung up on during my remarks. But I do think a couple of things for the public record need to be clarified. I don't think it's appropriate to say taxpayer dollars are at risk when taxpayer dollars
are not being spent on this project. I don't think it's appropriate to say taxpayer dollars are funding this project, and then at the, in the same argument argue that it's the Blazer fans that are paying for this project, neither of which, by the way, are true. I also don't think it's appropriate to argue that the council could make a decision to use spectator fund dollars, which is the source of the revenue that's paying for these improvements, to fund projects outside of sports facilities, which was the implication made by one of my colleagues up here. That actually threatens the general fund of the city, ironically. If you start bleeding off monies that sports fans pay into the spectator fund to build various amenities unrelated to sports throughout the city, that is what